from Wisconsin News on the State of the State to a heartfelt farewell address in Chicago ahead of a boisterous press conference in New York, we're rounding up all the news right now. Get set. It's time for Week in Review. Joining us this hour is Michelle Litchens. She's a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And we have Penny Bernard-Shaber. She's a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
Well, our first stop is a look at what happened in Wisconsin this week, beginning with Governor Scott Walker's 7th annual State of the State address Tuesday afternoon. On top of calling the state strong, Governor Walker included news, important news for the UW system. Let's take a listen.
I'm pleased to announce that our 2017 through 2019 state budget will do more than just freeze tuition. We will actually cut tuition for all Wisconsin undergraduates throughout the UW system.
And Penny, what do you think of the governor's announcement of this cut?
Well, I think it's an interesting announcement to be made in the State of the State address without any details about how that cut will be funded or what kind of cut it will be. Tuition has gone up in the UW system because the state assistance and the state support of the schools has gone down, and so tuition goes up. So now if the governor's going to cut tuition, he's got to increase assistance to the UW, and it's very important to see what those details are.
Meanwhile, Michelle, Speaker Robin Voss said he was open-minded about the proposal, but has yet to be persuaded that the tuition cut should be a priority for the legislature. What do you think? Is this a priority?
We'll have to see if it becomes a priority with how the governor proposes he's going to pay for that tuition cut, because you certainly can't demand that there's a cut without giving the UW system additional dollars to replace the money they're going to lose through tuition. My hope really is that the legislature takes a long, hard look at our higher education system in the state of Wisconsin. You know, I went on the UW site yesterday and I read something that we have 180,000 students and we have 40,000 faculty and staff statewide supporting them. And I thought, wow, that means each student is paying for, you know, four people's salary at the UW system schools. And there has to be a way to provide a higher education more efficiently today with the use of technology and perhaps get rid of some of the redundancy. So many of our 4 years now are expanding the number of majors that they're offering. Well, maybe it's time to make specialty schools around the state. You know, I would really hope that when we are looking at tight finances, that this is our opportunity, you know, with our legislators to be creative and come up with some new ideas for how we can deliver, you know, a top quality education, but perhaps for less money.
And I would agree with Michelle on that. We do have to look carefully at the UW system, but it should not be done in a budget process where you get very little public input and very little information given to the public about how it's done. So I would encourage that to be done in a wide open legislative and discussion type process rather than in the budget.
But Penny is totally correct about that, by the way, and I fully support what she just said.
Well, Speaker Voss said that he supports giving the UW system the $42.5 million it requested as long as the university is fair toward conservatives and liberals. He says the school has favored more liberal speakers, for example. Michelle, is that reasonable?
I think it is. You know, over the past number of years, if you're a conservative, if you're heading off to college in Wisconsin or to the university system, your side is not represented. So the speaker's office did a study where they looked at the top 50 people who were paid to speak at universities in the state of Wisconsin the previous year, and they found less than a handful of those people were conservatives. So I think our students need to be offered both sides. So right now, UW-Madison, and people might have seen this story, they're offering a class to men about how not to be strong men anymore. And I guess the university has the right to offer a class like that. But they also should be offering a class on, if you want to be a strong man, here's how you do it. You know, we need to be offering both sides to our students. And so if the university system wants additional funding from the state, which I do support funding the university system, I think we are very fortunate to have such an awesome and a high-performing system in our state. But I do think they need to show that they are representing both sides. They are not just shoving a liberal education down our kids' throats so that our kids report back to parents what they're learning in school, and many conservative parents just sit around with their jaws hanging out saying, I'm paying for this, because they just don't see any conservatives represented in school.
Penny, should the $42.5 million have strings attached to it or not?
Well, I don't know that you should attach strings to the funding for the UW system. The UW system is supposed to educate students to do critical thinking. And yes, they need to hear from both sides to do that. But we also have to learn as a citizen to listen to both sides and to work with each other in a much more productive fashion just in everyday life, not just in the UW system. But the critical thinking skills that students build in while they're in the university makes a huge difference to what they can do with the rest of their lives.
Well, let's move on to jobs now. That was another big topic that Governor Walker hit on in his speech, workforce. Here's the governor. Let's take a listen.
We went from a focus on jobs, 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 to talking about workforce, workforce, workforce. That will be my top priority for 2017 and beyond.
He also said that the biggest challenge is not just creating jobs, but finding people to fill them. What do you think of that, Penny? Is the governor correct?
Make sure that we have workers who have the skills for the jobs that are out there. And that's a very big role for some of our technical schools who do more of the manufacturing type skills. And the support for the technical schools over the last couple years has been very good. I also think the governor has to recognize that we've lost a lot of jobs here in Wisconsin, and that we have to be careful on how we work through this job system. We can't just say we gained jobs. We have to recognize which jobs have been lost, why they've been lost. Have they been lost to mechanical, technical improvements, and so you don't need as many workers? Or have they been lost because companies have moved out of the state? So we have to be careful on both sides of this equation, what we've gained and what we've lost.
Michelle, what about workforce? What do you hope to see the governor do?
Yeah, we are in a bit of a crisis, and I can say this as a food manufacturing employer myself. So we need people who want to work in our state, and I know that that it varies from different parts of the state, but I can tell you certainly in southeastern Wisconsin, if you have a skill and you're willing to show up every day and you can pass a drug test, you can ask for more money right now from your employer, because we can't find enough people who are willing to go to work every day, and especially people who have skills. And so I am very excited to hear the governor talking about this. We have employers in our state who cannot expand because they cannot find more employees. We have the lowest unemployment, one of the lowest unemployments across the entire country right now. So we need more people. And I think one place to look for those people are in the city of Milwaukee, where unemployment is still fairly high in the urban area, but a lot of those people still don't even have a high school diploma. And so we need to do something about education, I think, that would really help provide some employees around the state. But I think this is an issue that must be addressed, and I'm really excited to hear the governor talk about it.
Go ahead.
Well, if we look at Milwaukee and we try to focus on helping to improve the lives of the citizens of Milwaukee, we also have to make sure that the companies are closer to the city of Milwaukee and that the people who work have an opportunity to get to and from work. Many people don't have cars in Milwaukee, and they don't need a car. If we had good, strong public transit, they could get to work more easily. We also have to look at the pay level that people are receiving and make sure that the jobs are paying them a self-sufficient wage so that they can be support themselves and their families not be dependent on government.
Sure. Let me just add to that then. The average hourly wage in Milwaukee is $23.16 an hour, and this is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics from 2015, and the median wage is $18 an hour. So I think those are pretty good wages, and they continue to go up. I know personally I am paying almost $2 more an hour this year than I was 2 years ago for people who come in off the streets who have absolutely no skills at all. So we have a labor crisis right now because we don't have enough people who want to show up to work every day. So we need to do a little mentality changing. We need to do some job skills training, but we need to do something. you know, so we can provide the employees that our businesses need. Otherwise, they will leave our state to other states where they have people that are willing to work.
We're in the Week in Review here with Michelle Litchens. She's a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner she's been talking about. And Penny Bernard-Schaber, a former Democratic representative from Appleton. Add your voice to this discussion. What caused you paused in the news this week at 800-642-1234? You can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let's now go to the phones with Joe from Madison. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, hi. I should be graduating from Madison Area Technical College within the next month or two. But I fear going out and getting a real job because
you're worried about the
program,
workforce.
The program that I initially enrolled in had been restructured a couple different times, and the original program was more geared towards TV and VCR repair, right? And so now there's a program, it's electronics or electronics engineering with some calculus. But the tool that is going to get these students in the door is the education with programmable logic controllers. That's like a reconfigurable computer chip.
Are you finding that the skills needed in the workforce are changing faster than the academic programs?
Yes, although this school seems to be doing a pretty good job of meeting with the industry at least once a quarter. But I don't think that they're able to implement the needed changes quick enough because the budget isn't there to do so. Like, I was in one class where if we all had a development board that we could be working on, we would be a functioning class that could walk right into Alan and Bradley and, you know, take over their duties for a day.
So funding in the classroom and being able to have the needed equipment to learn on-the-job skills, how would you respond to this, Michelle?
Well, first of all, Joe, thank you so much for going to a technical college and educating yourself to get another skill so that you can go out there and earn more money, and I am sure that you will be able to find a job after you graduate. I know from working with the Fox Valley Technical College and even local businesses, it's amazing how many businesses provide tools to the local technical colleges, which they do work hand in hand. The technical colleges have local businesses on their board. They guide them. And the local technical schools really do want to be there to serve your local businesses. So as things change, which often they change, you know, faster than education can, but they try to provide the students that the businesses need. But I know that many businesses are willing to partner with the tech schools and provide them with the equipment that the students need to learn on so then the business can hire those people. So, you know, it's unfortunate that perhaps it can't happen as fast as we would like it to, but I think we really have a top-quality technical school system in the state of Wisconsin that really works hard and diligently with businesses to provide a top-quality education to our students.
Penny, yeah, go ahead. Penny?
That is correct. The technical college here, the Fox Valley Technical College, has done a wonderful job of working with the employers and the manufacturers to look at what skills are needed and to make sure that we are able to support those skills. And the companies have provided equipment so that students are being trained on the newest equipment. And it's very important to understand that technology changes so fast that it's hard for the technical colleges to keep up with all of the changes. And so the connection and the partnership with the companies is essential to the success of our schools and our students. But we do have to make sure that the technical college budget is much stronger and supports these things. And last year there was a revenue cap put on the technical colleges, which will limit their ability to continue the good work that they do.
It is the Week in Review with our guests rounding up a look at Wisconsin news and the developments on Capitol Hill. We'll be moving toward that next. We're talking with Michelle Litchens. She's a former Republican state lawmaker from Oshkosh, a small business owner as well. Penny Bernard Schaber, a former Democratic representative from Appleton. Add your voice to this discussion. What caused you pause in the news this week? 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're headed into a break and coming back to look at President Obama's farewell address from Chicago and then on to takeaways from President-elect Trump's press conference. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Stay with us for Conversations on the Ideas Network. Lots to explore, so much to discuss on the Week in Review as we turn our attention to national events now with our guests. Michelle Litchens, she's a former Republican state lawmaker from Oshkosh and a small business owner, and Penny Bernard Schaber, a former Democratic representative from Appleton. And let's hear from you as well. What national developments consumed your attention this week? What do you think of President Obama's speech and President-elect Trump's news conference? What did you talk about with the people around you? 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the news of the week on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, President Obama delivered his farewell remarks in front of 18,000 people in Chicago this week. Let's listen to this clip from near the end of his speech.
It has been the honor of my life to serve you. I won't stop. In fact, I will be right there with you as a citizen for all my remaining days. But for now, whether you are young or whether you're young at heart, I do have one final ask of you as your president. The same thing I asked when you took a chance on me 8 years ago. I'm asking you to believe, not in my ability to bring about change, but in yours.
And Michelle, what do you feel about this final ask?
We all should believe, right? And we all should participate and be active members of this democracy or democratic republic that we have. I'm glad to hear that he said he was going to continue fighting as a citizen. You know, all of our former presidents have kind of left and they were quiet so that the next president could push their agenda without having to always reflect on what the previous president thought about what the new president was doing. So I'm really hoping that President Obama gives the new president-elect Trump that opportunity so that he is not kind of hoarding the news. I thought that Obama was a great orator, as he always is. It was nice to hear that he talked so kindly about our country and his faith in our country and loved his family so much. If we wanted to talk about his speech a little bit, I would just say there's no greater repudiation of Obama's policies than the Republicans taking over everything, you know, after this time. I mean, the Republicans now control the White House, Congress, and the Senate.
Trifecta,
So, you know, people did not like his policies. In fact, I was elected in 2010. Republicans swept over the country again in 2010 because Obama reached so far to the left. In 2009 with Obamacare, not a single Republican voted for it. And so I think Obama did not listen to the American public while he was president. I think he thought that he had overwhelming, you know, far left liberal support while he was president. And I think the country kind of came back and said, yeah, we don't want to go that far to the left. We want to be somewhere in the middle. And the way to do that then is to kick everyone that was part of Obama's party out of office this last year. So it will be very interesting to see what happens now. But I think he gave, you know, a great speech, as he always does. He's a pleasure to listen to that way. But, you know, as far as his legacy, you know, I mean, everything that he did, well, much of it is going to be rolled back and changed. And that's because that's what the American public wants to see.
And Penny, what was your takeaway from what Obama had to say this week and about the end of his presidency?
Well, I found his speech to be very calming and reassuring. He was asking us all to work together.
I think we should all be very proud of President Obama and his wife, Michelle Obama. They had tremendous dedication and grace and composure under the last 8 years. They've been under a lot of pressure. I think what the American people are really tired of is the internal fighting and bickering that we have in politics today, and the fact that the Republican majority stood up and obstructed everything that was attempted by President Obama, and not letting him do the work that he was elected to do, to make some changes. And by obstructing everything that the president tried to do, he was forced into doing things through executive orders, and doing things in different areas rather than doing it through the legislative process, which is what we should be doing. I think he has many accomplishments that he can be proud of, and I was very happy that he was our president for 8 years.
And what role would you like to see him play after President-elect Trump is sworn in next Friday?
Well, I do think that he needs to step back a little bit. As Michelle mentioned, most presidents need to kind of step back and let the new president have an opportunity to do what they have been elected to do. And I'm hopeful that President-elect Trump will actually put aside some of his brusqueness and some of his communication skills that I think are going to give him trouble, and that he's more willing to listen to people and more willing to actually work with both sides of the Congress rather than just with one side.
Well, let's move on now to a rather combative press conference this week. It was highly anticipated, Mr. Trump's first one since July, wide-ranging, hitting on a number of topics from Affordable Care Act to Supreme Court justices. Let's start by listening to a clip from the speech, which came after Mr. Trump was asked if he would release his tax returns.
You know, the only one that cares about my tax returns are the reporters, okay? They're the only ones.
Well, since the news conference, we've heard people across the political spectrum, including GOP U.S. Representative Mark Sanford of South Carolina, saying interested in the release of these documents. Michelle, what do you think? Is this more than just journalists who are interested in these returns?
I really don't think most Americans are interested in his returns other than just wanting to see what it actually says and how much money he really does make. I don't think it's going to affect how he runs our country as president. I think releasing your tax returns is one reason. Well, and now, locally for office, you don't have to release your tax returns. But I think people want so much information about our elected officials today, it's a reason that intimidates people not to run for public office, because they don't want to expose all of their personal information, and I don't think they should need to do so. Does he need to fill out an economic interest statement? Definitely. Do we need to know, you know, where he wants to see money spent and where his money is invested? We definitely need to have that information. But knowing how much money he made, I don't think that that is going to help Americans make a better decision about him now that he's been elected president.
So you're saying knowing that he is a billionaire is enough?
It really is. Or even that he's not a billionaire. Who cares? They voted for a businessman that they thought could make some tough decisions and who was going to fight for America and say America's a strong, wonderful country again. And as he said, he wants to make America great again. So the fact that people know that he's a successful businessman is about all we need to know. And I'll be honest, having, you know, owned real estate, your tax returns look very different when you are a real estate investor. And most people, honestly, I don't understand my own tax returns, let alone everyone understanding what Donald Trump's tax returns look like. So I just don't think it's going to give us any more information than we already don't have.
Penny, are you hopeful the American public will get access to these returns?
Well, I do think the Americans should have access to his tax returns, because it's very important to know that he paid his fair share of taxes, and that he used whatever business subsidies he received as a businessman, that he used them correctly and accountably. And I think that's very important information that we should know as American citizens, because we're based in a country where everybody pays their fair share for all of us to be better. And it's important to know that President-elect Trump has paid his fair share and has done taxes appropriately, just like the rest of us have to do.
Do you think there will be any further movement on this? Where will this go?
Well,
Well, I do think there will be movement. I think there'll be questions raised during the confirmation hearings for the people in the cabinet, and there'll be pressure put on President-elect Trump through that process to actually release his tax records so that people can see, you know, what money he does have, whether or not he's paid his taxes, and whether or not all of the tax incentives or tax opportunities he's received from our government, he's used appropriately and correctly, and not just taking them as a subsidy for his business.
Well, let's go to the phones now with Mary from Lancaster. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a citizen, and I am very interested in knowing the future president's financial information in regards to how he avoids paying taxes for 18 years and what type of subsidies. And the other is everybody considers Trump, this is a mandate. And it's like there were 16 other candidates representing the Republicans in the primary, and none of them received a nomination besides Trump. And people I've talked to look at Trump as a joke, that the Republicans should take it as a sign. They want people to work together and not take it as a mandate so they can do whatever they want to do. I just feel that people look at the thing wrong.
Well, would releasing these tax returns improve Mr. Trump's integrity, his transparency? Michelle?
I don't think so. And again, I don't believe most Americans can read their own tax return, let alone somebody else's who's probably a couple hundred pages long. We have the IRS auditing him, and he's been audited before, so you can be guaranteed that he is following the law. Americans are not going to look at his tax returns and somehow pick out, oh, he shouldn't have taken that deduction there. And again, if you own real estate, and for everyone who's a real estate investor out there, you get to depreciate your real estate over 28 and a half years. That's just the way the law is written, but then you pay capital gains on that when you sell your real estate in the long run. So he may not have paid income taxes, but he may have paid a ton of capital gains taxes. So, but again, to most Americans, if you're not familiar with the tax laws, you're only going to look at the bottom line, and people are going to go out and attack him over that, and I just don't see that that's going to bring us together at all. I mean, that's just the people who don't like Donald Trump are not going to like him even more after they see his tax returns.
Well, Penny, would laying to rest the tax returns, getting them out there, would that end it? Would that be enough, and would that improve transparency?
Well, I do think it would improve transparency, and it would help people to understand how business actually works in our country. Here we have a businessman who's been elected our president, and he's not willing to release his tax records. That tells me that there's something there that he doesn't want people to see as a businessman. And if we want businesses to be successful and we've elected a businessman to be our president, he should be open and transparent about the way his money has been used and about the taxes that he has or has not paid as his fair share for what we do in our country.
Well, we're combing through the headlines and the developments that caught our eye in the Week in Review. Our guests, Michelle Litchens and Penny Bernard-Shaver, both former state lawmakers. They're our guides. They're staying with us as we turn our attention here to national developments and things that came under scrutiny this week. What is it that caught your attention? 800-642-1234, post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Lots of attention, of course, this week. Russia hacking, and then a 35-page dossier trying to parse all of this and figure out where it is headed. Let's move to Russia now before the end of this segment here. Regarding hacking of Democrats during the campaign, President-elect Trump said at the news conference, quote, "I think it was Russia," although a few minutes later he said perhaps it was another country. Penny, what stood out to you about Mr. Trump's position on Russian hacking?
Well, I think President-elect Trump is trying to avoid talking about Russia because he does seem to have connections to Russia, and so he's trying to avoid giving them a black eye. And I believe that he needs to be very careful about how he continues to either support what Russia is doing or not doing. And he has to be, again, once more open and honest about what he thinks and feels. He can't just continue to change his position. If we have cybersecurity concerns for any country, and especially for Russia, we need to address them, because those are things that will cause us problems in the future, and we have to address them right away. We can't just keep pushing them off and telling people to move on.
Michelle?
I think about Russia, yes. So we need to, you know, we need to look at Russia. I'm so proud my son's actually a Russian minor right now, so he's learning all about this, and it's kind of exciting. But I don't think Donald Trump is going to necessarily be the leader on this. I think Trump, and I, again, if people have heard me before, I was not a Trump fan. I'm not a Trump supporter necessarily. I'm a conservative first. But he has done a miraculous job at appointing some super smart people to his cabinet. And I think we've seen General Mattis when he said cybersecurity is a big problem in this country, and we need to do something about it, and we need to do something about Russian cyber attacks and other countries' cyber attacks, China's cyber attacks against our country. So I think that Donald Trump has put some really smart people in place who have shown through their testimony that they don't always agree with Donald Trump, and I think Trump is going to say that's okay. We have to remember he is a businessman. And a successful businessman is not a micromanager. They hire really smart people to do a good job who have to report back, but that means Trump also respects their opinion at the same time. So if Mattis says we have to go after not only Russia, but make sure that we provide the best cybersecurity we can for our country, I think that's exactly what's going to happen in the Trump administration.
And during this news conference, he addressed coverage of the media of this unproven collection of documents about ties to Russia, calling it a fake smear concocted by, quote, sick people. What is the reaction you have to this 35-page dossier and how the press have handled it? Michelle.
Okay, so Donald Trump does not handle all of these things as well as he can. I mean, there's really no question about that. I'll be honest, when this first happened with CNN, I was thrown back to what happened with Dan Rather and President George Bush when, you know, he was so eager to share some information and yet it wasn't substantiated. So if you're a conservative, you feel like the mainstream press is really out to get you every day. When you read the stories, I mean, it's really going after conservatives on a regular basis, and we even heard them talk about how they're not familiar with the rest of the country, the New York Times and other papers, and how the rest of America feels. And so they really head into stories from a liberal bias, and I think they are quick to jump on stories sometimes just because they hate Donald Trump so much.
Well, was Mr. Trump in the right to call CNN fake news?
Again, Donald Trump does not have any tact, not at all, and I've hoped that he would gain some tact. He won't, and he will continue to tweet obnoxious things for the next 4 years. I'm just accepting that that's the reality.
And I'm very worried about that reality. I'm very worried about that.
Go ahead, Penny.
I'm very worried about that reality because if Donald Trump can't control himself in what he says in the press and what he says on his tweets and what he says at his press conferences, he could get our country in some very, very deep trouble. And we need to be, he needs to be much more considerate and concerned about what he says and how he says it.
Well, you know, just to add to that, though, I'm glad in a sense that I just can't even believe I'm saying this. Not that he's obnoxious, but you know what? The press needs to hear what he said, and before they publish something as truth, they need to make darn sure that it is truth.
But that goes both ways, Michelle. That goes both ways, and there have been many examples of the press saying things about people on the other side of the aisle that are not true, too. And so all of us need to learn really to listen carefully to what is said and to take time to talk to people on both sides of an issue and not just allow bad-mouthing of somebody be the news, because that is not news.
Well, we're going to leave it there with that topic, combing through the headlines and developments that caught our attention this week in the Week in Review. Our guests, Michelle Lichens and Penny Bernard-Shaber, both former state lawmakers, they're staying with us as we turn our attention now to Senate confirmation hearings this week. President-elect Trump's cabinet nominees have been facing Senate scrutiny all this week. Which hearings did you pay attention to and why? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234 or post your thoughts on the Senate confirmations on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We're back in a moment, and then it's time for a look at cabinet confirmation hearings right here on the Ideas Network. Cabinet confirmation hearings underway this week, and we're seeing nominees who have serious disagreements with the president-elect on policy. Good morning. It's the Week in Review on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy. We're taking a closer look now at what's being said in these hearings with our guests. Michelle Lichens, a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh and a small business owner, and Penny Bernard-Shaber, a former Democratic representative from Appleton. And we want to hear from you as well. What have been the most informative moments for you in these confirmation hearings? And what about the pace of them? Are they moving too quickly? Tell us about them at 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So these confirmation hearings from Mr. Trump's cabinet pick started this week with Alabama GOP Senator Jeff Sessions, who's being considered for Attorney General. His colleague, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, testified Wednesday, becoming the first sitting senator to testify against a fellow sitting senator at a confirmation hearing for a cabinet post. Let's take a listen here.
If confirmed, Senator Sessions will be required to pursue justice for women, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend the equal rights of gay and lesbian and transgender Americans, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend voting rights, but his record indicates that he won't. He will be expected to defend the rights of immigrants and affirm their human dignity, but the record indicates that he won't. His record indicates that as Attorney General, he would object to the growing national bipartisan movement towards criminal justice reform. His record indicates that we cannot count on him to support state and national efforts towards bringing justice to the justice system.
Penny, what do you make of Senator Booker's remarks here?
Well, it is a very interesting point of view from Senator Booker to talk about Senator Sessions' record. His record from Senator Sessions is not good in all the areas that Senator Booker mentioned. And we have to be concerned, because if Senator Sessions has a record like he has, and then he's going to apply the law throughout the country as our Attorney General, we have to be concerned that he will not apply it equally and fairly across the board. And so I think Senator Booker has some very, very big points to be made, and we have to be considerate of those points.
Michelle, what do you think? Was Senator Booker out of line here?
I do think that he was a bit out of line. I was pleased to see that Sessions' former chief of staff, who happens to be an African American, testified saying he never once felt that Senator Sessions was bigoted or biased towards him ever. And as we all know, if you are working with the chief of staff, I mean, it's one of your closest partners in all of politics. And so he would not have hired an African American if he was bigoted or biased in some way. Judging that someone is against women because they don't support abortion is utterly ridiculous. I mean, there are a lot of stretches that that Cory Booker was talking about. I think he really went over the top. We did not see the fireworks that we thought we were going to see. I think Sessions was very prepared for the questions that he was proposed. I think he is a very smart individual, and he will enforce the laws that are on the books. And conservatives are known for not picking and choosing the laws that they are going to enforce. And so I think that he's going to do an outstanding job, and he is not going to discriminate against anyone.
Penny, how do you see his preparations in this confirmation hearing?
Well, I do think he's very prepared, and he is a very intelligent person, but I do have concerns for how he will move forward in our voting rights areas, because the Republican majority has made a very strong effort to limit the rights of people to vote, which is a fundamental right that we have in our country that should not be limited, and it should be made easier for people to be able to exercise their right and responsibility to vote. So I have major concerns about how he will act in that particular arena.
Well, let's hear what you had to say. Add your voice to this discussion at 1-800-642-1234. How do you feel about cabinet picks and the confirmation process and how it's going in the Senate? You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We can hear from you at 800-642-1234. And during these hearings, now for General James Mattis, who is up for Secretary of Defense, he veered away from Mr. Trump on Russia, calling Moscow one of the top threats to the American-led world order. He said, quote, "I'm all for engagement, but we also have to recognize reality in terms of what Russia is up to." Penny, are you surprised by what he said?
Well, I think General James Mattis probably has a little more experience with actually working with or trying to coordinate with Russia than President Trump does. And I think we should listen carefully to what General Mattis has to say, because I do believe Russia is a threat to our democracy and that we have to be careful with how we approach and what we do with Russia in the future.
And Michelle, how do you feel about the Mattis confirmation hearing?
I was very impressed with what he had to say. And obviously a number of Democrats must have been as well, because 81 senators voted to change the rules so that he could fill this position. General Mattis is a super smart man, and again, that gets back to my points about Donald Trump nominating people who are capable leaders, who have been successful in the past, who are super smart in their area of expertise. I think we are going to all, as a country, be very impressed with what Mattis is able to do.
And moving on, a flurry of confirmation hearings, kind of getting whiplash here. ExxonMobil chief Rex Tillerson, who was also up this week, during which he told the Senate committee considering his nomination as Secretary of State that he would push back against President Putin's efforts to expand Russian influence. Penny, what concerns you do you have about Tillerson?
Well, I think Rex Tillerson has very deep connections to the fossil fuel industry, and that we have to be careful about his connections to that and the other connections that we see in the Trump cabinet appointees, because we have to move away from fossil fuels. They are a very limited resource. We have used them very much already, and we've had many problems from fossil fuels. And I think we need to move to the future of our energy source and start looking much more carefully and more clearly at renewable energy and making that how we produce energy for our country. So I'm a little concerned about the connections to all the fossil fuel companies that we have in these cabinet appointments, especially in Rex Tillerson.
And Michelle, what were your takeaways from the Rex Tillerson, the former ExxonMobil chief?
Again, I thought he was very prepared. I thought he is just a super smart guy. The guy is a lifelong Boy Scout. He's an engineer. And for anyone who knows an engineer, they are kind of fact finders, right? I mean, they like 2 + 2 = 4 and everything moving consistently in that direction that just makes sense. And so I think he is a very honest person. You can't be a lifelong Boy Scout and active in scouting and not being an honest person. I think he's going to tell us what he thinks, even if he disagrees with President Trump, which is pleasant to hear. Again, Trump, put people there because he thought they were smart, not just because they are going to walk lockstep with what Trump believes in. And so I think we are all going to be pleasantly surprised with him.
Well, full phone lines right now on the confirmation hearings. Lots to talk about. Rose in Menominee Falls. Hi, Rose.
Oh, hello. I'm concerned. I keep hearing President Trump has appointed all these smart, super smart people.
Are you still there? Oh, we lost Rose. Well, let's take another call here on confirmation hearings, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Jerry now in Lake Mills. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. I agree with the lady that just dropped off. These people may be super, super smart, but let's remember, they are still working in their own behalf, in their own self-interest. That is no indication of how they will work for us. Thank you.
Well, Penny, how would you respond to that?
Well, I would have to agree with Jerry, because we do have to be concerned that that the appointees for these cabinet positions will work for the self-interest of themselves and whatever company they worked for before, and for the industry that they did represent at one time. And we need to have people working for the whole country and working for the future of our country, as well as for what currently happens right now. So I agree with Jerry from Lake Mills.
Michelle, conflicts of interest in cabinet picks and in Mr. Trump, how would you respond?
Well, first of all, everyone appoints someone to their cabinet positions, every president, President Obama as well. They appoint people that tend to agree with them, and so they are going to promote the ideas that they believe in, their political philosophy. We know that. So are Democrats going to agree with all of his cabinet appointments? No, because they're not going to agree politically. We have a free press in this country. There is no doubt in my mind that if any of those cabinet appointees tend to veer too far and do something, you know, that's going to benefit them personally, we are going to hear about it. We are going to read about it. It's going to be front page news. He also appointed people who are independently wealthy. Many of these people are very wealthy. So they are not, they don't need to be doing anything to promote themselves or their business, for that matter. Really, they have an opportunity now to spend 2 or 4 years and just work diligently for a country that they all passionately care about.
And Michelle, are you concerned about the speed of the vetting process here? There's been criticism that these hearings are moving too quickly. How do you feel?
I'm not concerned about that. The Democrats are getting an opportunity to ask the questions they want to ask. The public is obviously paying attention to what's going on. So they are going to be approved, and as long as they have a hearing where people have an opportunity to ask any questions or anything that they are concerned about, I'm not worried about the hearings going too fast.
Penny, are they going to be approved, and the speed of the hearings?
Well, I think they are going a little bit fast. The public does like to know what's going on in Washington, D.C., and even though the senators and congressmen can be at the hearings, the public likes to have an opportunity to understand what's going on. I have some concerns about the cabinet appointees. They have not filled out all of their economic interest forms, and just because they're independently wealthy doesn't mean they will do the right thing. It means they maybe will do something that will help them be more wealthy at the end of all this. We just have to be a little careful about how this proceeds and making sure that the public understands what's going on.
Do you think they'll all be confirmed?
I don't know. I think there may be some questions about Scott Pruitt, the person from Oklahoma who's being put forward for the EPA. I have some major concerns about him, and I know that other people concerned about the environment are very concerned about his nomination for this position, and so I think he may be one that gets a lot more scrutiny.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Michelle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Michelle Litchens is a former Republican state representative from Oshkosh. And Penny, thank you for your time.
Sure. Thank you, Kate. Nice to be with you, Michelle.
That was Penny Bernard-Shaber, a former Democratic representative of the 57th Assembly District. This Week in Review is produced by Brianne Chasso, Bill Martins, and Chris Molina, with technical direction from Michelle Good. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy Cardine, who returns, by the way, on Monday. And I have thoroughly enjoyed the thoughtful conversations with you this week here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us for On Point with Tom Ashbrook, coming up next.